Ryan Danley, how the hell are you?
Jesse, I'm freaking great.
It's great to finally meet you. We've been Facebook friends for maybe 2 or 3 years. I don't even know how long.
I have met you a couple times.
Oh yeah, we did. But it's great to like sit and talk because we've met like at Mike's, and we're not. I think we met once at Henry's.
Yeah, we met once at Henry's, but we also weren't we on the show together? You watched like a historic bomb of mine on that show up in Rockland.
Oh, was that the pizza place?
Is it pizza?
No, pizza place or the was it Painkillers?
Yeah, it was Painkillers. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I had just come down from Savage Henry, and like I was doing a show there.
Were you hungover?
No,
Savage Henry.
They just didn't.
They didn't get you.
They just didn't like me. You know,
it's Rockland.
It's Rockland, and you know, like I mean, there's a certain. I've done better since then at like casting a bigger net of, you know what I mean, but like it just wasn't really my crowd, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, Rockland's like, a tough sell.
Yeah, and like I think if you were more like a club comic with a lot more like bridge and tunnel material.
And did they like introduce you as somebody from Portland? Because Rockland probably right away hated you.
Yeah,
when
they did.
And, yeah, yeah.
That was I think a Jay Gonzo joint. I don't know.
Jay Gonzo's a great guy.
Yeah,
yeah.
He was great, and yeah. He was excited for me to have me on the show, and I was excited to be on there. It just didn't work.
Uh huh. But Jay Gonzo's one of those cats, and I don't mean this in a bad way at all. But he's a great promoter, but he promotes everything. So like he doesn't like comedy is just one of the things he promotes, right? Or produces. Right. So it's not like he gives his 100% to comedy where he would know those like little nuances, things like that. But anyway, great guy. I vaguely remember that show. I remember you more at Henry's, and I just remember all of the funny shit that you post on Facebook and all your stuff.
Like Facebook's like my small little stage that I just like kind of like jot down. Like I'm like bursting at the seams in my brain all day long, you know what I mean? And it's just like a good place to like let a little bit of a leak out, and you know what I mean? And so you know, I've enjoyed you know, I've kept myself kind of in the public eye with my Facebook and postings. You know what I mean? It's kept me.
Do you ever start feeling like you want to delete Facebook, but you're just like, I can't because like we use it for so much?
I have a weird acceptance of it. You know what I mean? Like I just kind of like a lot of people say they want to quit it. I'm just like, I just don't even know. Like with as much as I do like networking with comedians on it, at this point it's like having a phone. Like I don't really like that either, you know what I mean? But like it's like I just like it's just kind of like part of the thing now, you know what I mean? So I'm not pro it, I'm not against it, it just kind of is it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, like I don't know, like I have good engagement on it, and you know, so it is what it is, you know. It's like I don't think people are really that amazing on it or off of it sometimes, you know what I mean? Like all the bad things about Facebook, like I kind of felt that way before social media.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it's
I'm kind of cynical by nature, so I'm just like, yeah, fuck it. But let's talk about you're an interesting cat, because you're like, of course you're a stand-up comic, but you also podcaster, writer. Want to kind of like list the things that you do? Like you're talking to somebody brand new and they say, well, so what do you do? Like what do you do? What do you tell them?
Well, I, you know, as far as entertainment stuff, like I have like a job, you know, and, but like I spend most of my time, I do, you know, stand up is what I really love. I host a podcast called Another Goddamn Horror Podcast with, a comedian friend and another friend of ours who live in New York. And we interview people from all over the arts and entertainment spectrum about themselves and their projects and horror movies.
So are you tackling current horror movies or like classic horror movies, or is just whatever?
We our main focus is like independent horror, you know. Ooh. What I mean, that's where we have our kind of our feet dug in, and we have a very, you know, we're on a podcast network, and we're actually kind of an operating semi-successful podcast as far as they go, you know what I mean? So we've interviewed all sorts of really great people from all over the place, and it kind of just depends. Like sometimes we'll talk about the Godzilla versus Kongs, and then sometimes we're talking about like a little movie that's just on like a horror movie fest circuit, you know what I mean? We talk to people about all those sorts of things, and we also just like interview people. Like, we've interviewed, you know, we've interviewed Johnny Taylor, we've interviewed Kyle Kinane, we, you know, so tons of comics. We also interview like Lucian Graves from the Church of Satan, and we we're saying goodbye to Johnny Taylor, but we off you know, breaking the fourth wall there.
Yeah.
So we interview a lot of cool people from all of that. A lot of people from bands. You know, we've interviewed Billy from Biohazard, and like.
So these guys are big horror fans.
Most of them, yeah, and then some of them, yes, some of them, no. You know what I mean? Like, but that we were okay with talking about that too, because that's always an interesting subject. Basically, it's just like about interviewing people that we love who do projects that we love.
And, oh, that's great!
And then, like, and then we talk to them about horror. You know what I mean?
So, I want to touch on something really quick, because you said it's a semi successful podcast, and everyone out there wants to do a podcast, wants to start a podcast, and they have these big dreams of like, I'm going to get a podcast, I'm going to get sponsors, and I'm gonna blah, 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 Joe Rogan, right? What was it like to, how long was it a podcast before it like grew to be like a semi-successful podcast? Like what was that like, getting it to be where like, all right, this is a thing now?
Well, I mean, it takes like, it's just like stand-up. It's just like, you have to enjoy every step of it. You know what I mean? You can't like, you gotta like, I mean, there's like the things of like, as long as you're consistent and showing up every time and you're actively trying to increase the quality of the content.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just going to take you as long as your idea was. I think a lot of people in arts and things in general, you know, and I mean, this isn't to, some people can tell if things are working or not working, but like, the reality is all of this stuff just takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of focus, and you have to be down for the journey.
Yeah. And how much has it evolved from day one? Like, was isn't it crazy? Like how?
Yeah. I mean, like, you listen to our first episode, which is actually pretty commonly listened to still to this day. Oddly, like on the analytics, it still shows up. But it sounds like our open mic. You know, we all knew each other and we were all friends, but we weren't like me and my co-host, we talk all day long every day, and we all really know each other now. You know what I mean? And so the conversations are smoother through that, and we're able to now conduct interviews, you know, through a like with an arc in the, you know what I mean? Like, we come in with some bullet points, and it's just like anything. Like, if you've learned it and you've done it enough times, you can go in with a plan and be like, okay, this is going to work, this is going to work, and this is going to work. You know what I mean? And like, I mean, everything's a formula. You know what I mean?
Is it similar to stand up? Whereas like, I know for me, going back and listening to my first set is just like, I'm just like, oh, this is so horrible. And like, I go back and listen to like my first handful of podcasts, and I'm like, oh my God, the sound was horrible, and I'm talking over the guests, and I'm going, is it hard to listen to that first episode, or were you pretty happy with it?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to listen to it. I mean, it's silly. It's because it's so clunky, and the enthusiasm is there. Yeah, I mean, I think like with anything, it's like, yeah, if I watch old stand-ups of myself, I'll be like, dude, hurry up. Finish the joke. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, dude, why didn't you punch it through here? You know what I mean? Like, you want to like yell at yourself and be like, hey, do it like that. But like with anything, it takes doing that stuff to do it. And like I said, it's just all about like almost like enjoying, like, I'm glad the first one sounds the way it does.
Because, it makes you want to do better.
Yeah. And because like you listen to it and you're like, okay, this is where we're at. And it's like, and then we, you know, you stack it on the best, you know? And like, I kind of feel like, I think what's great about stand-up in general is it kind of gives me that, like, even, like, you know, we're fortunate in Portland to work with a couple greats, like Kyle Kinane lives in Portland, and, you know, and I mean, you'll talk to him at the show, and he still struggles with the same stuff that people, you know, everybody's still working on jokes, and it's still, like, you know, I skated growing up, and, like, And, you know, like, you watch a skate video and you see these amazing skaters landing all these tricks, but you didn't see the 50 times they didn't stick it. You know what I mean? Like, you might see, like, a little section in the middle of the video where they all crash or whatever. But, you know, some of these tricks take people, like, 20, 30 times to stick, you know, to make it to the video. And that's just what they do, and that's their job. And so I kind of feel like it's like that with the... with the podcast. Is like, you're just going to keep trying, you're just going to keep doing, and you're just going to, you know, I can be attacked by little dogs.
Yeah, that was my dog breathing heavy.
like chihuahuas are just like the cutest best animals. But, you know, so it's just like, you know, so I'm glad that it's because it just gives us the work to do it. And you got to, like, I think with any of this stuff, you know, you're never going to arrive, and you got to be like, okay with that. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like,
are you also a writer? Like, why do I want to keep bringing that up? So you're also a writer.
Yeah, I write for the Hard Times. I got like 80 something articles with those guys, and I've done some music journalism with those guys, and I've written for a bunch of other satire sites and things like that.
Okay.
Which has been pretty good because it's been a good like side hustle, and you know, you make some money. During the pandemic, I was getting published quite a bit, and it's a good exercise for all of the other things, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? So there's, you know, writing is kind of my first love.
I was gonna say, so were you a writer first and then stand up and then podcasting? Is that how it happened?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, well, I started doing like comedy writing like after stand up. So stand up, well, I've always been a writer of sorts, not a professional writer. I've written stories, always things. I've always read a lot. I've always like, I am fascinated by language and words, and I really enjoy like reading Joan Didion or Kurt Vonnegut, or you know what I mean, and like and how they master the language. I enjoy stand-ups who are like, you know, the Anthony Jeselniks and the Mitch Hedbergs and the people who are really controlled over words and low fat jokes, and like, you know, and you know, I listen to a lot of music, and I really love hip hop, and because of, you know, of their usage of language, and you know what I mean, and like all of those sorts of things, and poetry and anything that's like word art, I really, really dig. And I have like my whole life, I've just now, you know, got to the place where I was applying it in that sort of section. But yeah, no, I've always written like I had op-eds and local papers and stuff like that. So, you know, I ran the school newspaper before I got thrown out of my high school, you know, that kind of situation, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So,
what'd you get thrown out of your high school for? Something you wrote?
No. Well, it's like going to jail. Like, what did you go to jail for? It's usually a number of things. But it's, I am a political person, and I was in trouble for starting some kerfuffles in the school that I went to. Technically, they threw me out for lack of attendance, but the real reason I got thrown out was for wearing a Public Enemy shirt, because it was inciting. I was having some issues at the...
What year was this?
1991.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had a Fear of a Black Planet shirt, and and there had been some trouble with some local neo-Nazi kids in the school, and I went to a very racist high school, and I'm not a very quiet person, and so I was pretty active in the situation that's not that stuff, and yeah, we got into, I would get into it with people, and it turned into some, what I would call aggressive of interactions, and eventually they thought I was trying to incite violence with the shirt. So, wow. So, yeah, so that was the big thing. I wore it one day, they sent me home, and then when I came back, they had you've missed 10 classes, and now you're expelled, so...
That sucks. That's crazy, though. Over Public Enemy. That's dope.
Yeah, it's, you know, like, I ended up graduating from an alternative school. It sort of embraced my sort of mentality on things, you know, and you know, it was great. Actually, I'm in the end really glad that I got thrown out of that school because that school sucked.
Yeah, what was it like for you in your head when it was happening? Were you like, I'm all in on this decision I made, or did you like think to yourself, man, I fucked up, or like, what am I gonna do now? Like, what?
No, not
at all.
Fuck them. You know what I mean? Like, that was from the get go. It was always fuck them. And
where did that fuck them attitude come from at such a young age? Who instilled it? Was there a dude at the record store? Was it what was it?
I mean, some of it, it's a little bit from my parents. You know, my parents were, I grew up in rural Colorado. My parents are East Coast hippies, and my dad's kind of a New Yorker kind of vibe, and got a little bit of fuck you to him, and he's him and I are like different politically, but like but he's still, you know, he's what I would call like a liberal, you know what I mean? But he was a hippie, and you know, went to Woodstock and shit like that, and so I kind of grew up with this attitude about like things, and you know, shit like, I just have always been, since the beginning of my life, always been a you know, like I don't like bullies, and I don't like people who punch down, and I don't like people who treat people poorly based on bullshit like race or gender or sexual orientation. All that shit, it just has never made sense to me in my life, and like I don't think those people should be able to like go unscathed, and I'm willing to bully the bullies. You know what
right,
I mean? Like,
right.
It's like that's just, and it's, I've always kind of been willing to throw myself on that sword, you know what I mean? And that's it's not even willing, it's just kind of like what I do.
That's dope. So then if I'm like trying to construct your timeline, you were, because I didn't start doing stand-up until I was like 47. Mm-hmm. So you didn't start doing stand-up till you're how old you were, because you've only been doing stand-up for like 6 years, 7 years.
Yeah, it was like 7 years, and like I did it so in my 20s, I was just in bands. I was just in punk bands and just like hung out and shot pool and drank booze and stuff. And then I had kids, and I went through like some turmoil, because believe it or not, like a lot of those lifestyle choices don't lead to a really like clean mental thinking situation for a long time. So you know what I mean? Right. So you know, and I got sober and really concentrated on raising my two kids.
Nice.
So through my 20s and most of my 30s, I got sober in my 30s and kind of wasted a bunch of my late 20s just drinking too much and partying. I don't want to say partying, because sitting alone drinking like a bottle of whiskey isn't really a party. Maybe. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I mean, it depends on what you, I don't want to define anybody's you know, party. You know, if you're doing that tonight while listening to this podcast, go ahead and party. Go ahead and party. Me, unfortunately, it could just get sadder as it went. So I just wanted to be a good dad, and I wanted to take care of my kids.
Props.
Coming home beat up a lot and stuff like that. Isn't necessarily in my opinion, wasn't setting me up to be the parent that I wanted to be. So, you know what I mean? My kids are supposed to come home and hide behind me, not come and hide from me. You know what I mean? And that's the way I feel about it. And that's the way I feel about it. And I have a great relationship with my kids, and I've been clean and sober for over 14 years. So
good for you. Congratulations on that. I got clean off the drugs in 2005, and then I stopped boozing like maybe like 2017, and now I'm just like that basic California sober, like just weed, water, and coffee. That's it.
Yeah, I'm just Portland sober, which means I don't smoke weed and I don't drink, but I do smoke speed off of tinfoil at the bus stop.
they have tinfoil dispensers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You just pull a piece out.
Yeah, they're like, don't take too much.
No, I don't smoke speed off of tinfoil anymore, but I would if I went back out. Probably before drinking.
Yeah. I hate to say, like, partying was fucking fun, but it just wasn't a life-sustaining type of like that lifestyle. Just it was gonna end bad.
I think that, like, you know what I mean, and there's still like, there'll always be parts of me that miss the good times, you know what I mean, like on a hot summer day, like slip and slides right in the backyard and kids are playing and you're crushing a 40 and like, you know, ice cold 40, and it's just like, and it's a good time and those things are good and you're like, yeah, but I just like, I have to remind myself, I also like, we'll fight the neighbors, you know what I mean? And it's like, when you become a hammer,
did you love to write when you were inebriated? Like, was it funner to write when you were like that?
Sure. And you know, and I did a lot, and I wrote a lot of songs, you know what I mean? I was in you know, punk and hardcore bands for a lot of years, and like, so like, I wrote a lot of music, and I wrote a lot of stories, like horror stories and things like that. I still actually use chunks of that in more modern stuff. There's books and stuff I'm writing, and so it's like, I will use chunks of those stories in modern stories, you know what I mean? So I still have all that stuff, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's,
well, like, you have notebooks or hard drives, floppy disks?
Notebooks, man. Like, some of them are printed papers, and some of them, I used to, like, I'm better at it now, but I used to just use pen to paper. Uh-huh. And, like, so, even when I first started stand-up, it was all pen to paper.
I still I graduated in 1989, so I'm maybe a couple years older than you, but not, like, my first love is pen to paper. Like, when I used to write in high school, I loved the smell of the pen on the paper. Yep. I loved the sound of it. All of it was so therapeutic to me.
I fully agree. I still like jotting things down. I still like hating my handwriting. I still like, you know what I mean? Like, it's still like, I still love pen to paper. And, I did good in that sort of situation, but I will tell you that, like, for me and knowing myself, I think that, like, being a sober person has, made me infinitely better at
all of this. At, like, remembering the stuff too, right? And, like, completing stuff.
And just kind of, like, starting at a even place, like, a static. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, like, have, like, I mean, I'm, like, kind of crazy still. So, like, it's, like, I kind of, like literally crazy. Like, you know, like, I know people hate that word, but, like, it's accurate. And, like, you know, so I enjoy the least amount of variables. Like, even if I still drank, I would never do it before stand-up. Like, I like going up there, like, with a clean slate, mm-hmm. like, not throwing any more curveballs at what I'm trying to do. I want to be able to be like, okay, this is working, da-da-da-da-da. I want to do that, like, algorithm in my head.
Of, yeah,
like,
I want to be cognizant of the moment.
Yeah, and everything. Right, and adjusting, like, okay, they're liking at this, and am I telling this joke with this oomph? And I want to, like, I don't want to be like, hey, you know what? Like, you know, I mean, stand-up's fucking hard. I mean, point-blank period. It's a challenging sort of thing, and it's different scenarios all the time, and it's like sometimes, like, you know, jokes that are 100% like that kill, and 99.9% of the time you'll go to one place and they'll be like, huh. And you're like, oh, okay, so now I have to, like, rewrite my thing in my brain, you know what I mean? And, like, I love all that. I really do. Like, to me, that's the it's like swinging a golf club or baseball, throwing a pitch. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, it's a little bit different every time, and you got to try to, like, nail it. And I personally am really glad I'm tackling this sober, because I think that it's allowed me to work and do the things that I need to do.
I think if I would have tried doing stand up when I was partying, I'd be dead. I don't think I would. You know, I wouldn't have amounted to anything. I'm not that I'm anything now, but I mean, it's still, I'm enjoying what I'm doing, like, so much, you know. I'm like,
you know, I think you know, like lately there's been some kerfuffles in the scene, and, like, some people will pipe in and be like, hey, you know, it's not like any of us are going to be famous or whatever. And it's like, don't sell yourself short, Jesse. You got great friends. You got a podcast that people like to be on. When you asked me, I was really excited. I see people doing it. I mean, you got your friends with, you know, scene legends like Johnny Taylor. You just recorded at the Punchline. You did, the set that you had tonight was fantastic. So you're doing Thank the you. Work and you're doing that. And I think that, and this is what I'm talking about, like, enjoying it along the way. Yes, I want to be better. Do I sometimes psychotically want to be better? Absolutely. Do sometimes I want to move up maybe faster than I'm actually moving up? Yes, absolutely. But the truth is, like that drive is, yes, what makes us artists. Like, people like to think that artists are hippies and they're just free and stuff like that. I haven't found that to be true. I think artists are people who want to be, like, good and, like, dial things in and get better and, like, increase, you know what I mean?
They're willing to do the work and the experiment and the failures.
Exactly. And you have to be able to do that. But, like, I also don't want to take away from the fact that people think that we're, like, oh, well, you're not famous, so what does this all matter? It's like, I drove down here to Sacramento with one of my best friends in comedy, one of my best friends, and hung out on a set with people that I've been, you know, Johnny and I have been really good friends for a long time. We both wrote at the Hard Times together. With you, we've interacted a couple times, and we've been friendly. And I was able to, I'm really proud of my set that I had in front of those situations, you know, and... that's the success, you know what I mean? And so, like, I think we have a tendency as artists to be like, and there's a lot of people who's like, I'm not going to get wrapped up in, like, not to get too political, but I'm not going to get wrapped up in the capitalism of it all. You know what I mean? Yes. Maybe I'm not going to ever be famous. Maybe I'm never going to have, you know, a giant special that gets shopped around to big places or anything like that. But am I killing some sets? Am I still improving? Am I still able to, like, have a fucking great time? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And that's how I'm going to measure my success. You know what I mean? Like, that's how, like, being friends with Keith Lowell Jensen, you, Robert Barry, Johnny Taylor.
Tonight's lineup was insane.
It was insane, you know? And it was, like, and knowing all these guys for all these years and respecting the work that those guys put in and stuff like that, to come in and, like, be on that lineup and, like, knock out a fat, you know,
a great set.
Thank you. And, like, I'm proud of it. And it's, that's, to me, I want, of course, other things, but, like, fuck, man, like, this is the art, you know, this is the thing. And it's like, I feel really bad for people who are only going to judge themselves on, like, that metrics. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, are we really going to, like,
yeah,
like, man, live your dreams, man. Be grateful for what we have.
Yeah.
Very, very.
No, I'm super happy with what I have. I'm super proud of what I've accomplished. But I just don't ever want to come off like as having a big head or
And I get that, but also, you know what, you're fucking killing it and kill it, dude. You know what I mean? And I get that, but like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it if I didn't mean it.
And I appreciate that.
I knew from the first time I met you and just our interactions, and we're both Oasis fans. So
I was waiting for the opportunity to bring up our mutual love of one of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time. They checked all the boxes. Yes,
everything. For me, like, you know, I wasn't an Oasis fan for a long time.
And then
I kind of came, like, some friends were like, you're wrong about this. And some friends I trusted. And then I kind of came out, because I was always, like, a Stone Roses fan. And I've always been a Manchester and Madchester.
Oh, fucking love Manchester.
Yeah. Like
this is going to turn into a whole other podcast
Exactly. And always a huge fan of that. And the second I started listening to Oasis like that, I was like, oh, holy shit, this is fucking amazing. And, like, you know, and I just love Hooligan. Like, I love, like, the Happy Mondays. I have this thing for people who can play, like, poppy, sort of enjoyable, like, you know, because I grew up on punk and hardcore and stuff like that. And, like, you know, and hip-hop and, like, all that stuff. And I love all that music. But I can really enjoy a band like the Happy Mondays who can write a song like 24-hour party people. But they're still, like, pistol-whipping dudes in the back over drug deals gone wrong. You know what I mean? I just, like, there's just something about that, like, gravity that creates that situation, you know? And you know, I love old-school reggae, like, 60s and 70s reggae. And there's just something about, like, Jamaica and Manchester. And, you know, there's these places that just, like, spawn. Yep, exactly. All that Studio One stuff, amazing. There's just something about that world that, you know, those spots, they get that amazing, they get that, like, you know, what's the name of that housing project that Nas and Mobb Deep and a bunch of people are from?
I want to say Marcy, but that's Jay-Z.
Yeah. Well, Jay-Z's from Marcy. They're from, but those guys are from Queens. What's that one in Brownsville? Anyways, like the same housing projects spawned, you know, freaking Nas and Mobb Deep, and I'm a huge Mobb Deep fan, and like rest in peace Prodigy, but it just shows that like human beings just need like that thing.
Yeah, you know, which is how like Manchester spawned all this great music. Yep. You know, I mean, people always say like Liverpool, but like Liverpool is just like the Beatles. Like that's, I mean, there's a lot more, right?
Sure.
But like, I think Manchester is more like when you're gonna like open up the annals of rock and roll. I think we owe more to Manchester than we do to like Liverpool.
Oh well, and no, and I totally agree. And also, they're not very far from each other. But like they're all North England, and it's just, I mean, there's just something about towns that like close their factories down, and the kids have nothing else to do, and they live those real lives, and that music comes out like that. You know what I mean? From the Buzzcocks to Joy Division to New Order to the Smiths to, you know what I mean? You can go on and on and on, all the way up to now. They're busting out great grime and like a bunch of different things from Manchester, and like, I mean, it's just a scene of like great music, and it just shows like the human spirit will thrive regardless of all the bullshit we throw at it.
Yeah. Know? When you fell for Oasis, were you already a fan of like the Smiths and like?
I was. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
did
like,
that help you? Like say like
yeah. Like once I like heard them as a like a Manchester band, I was like, oh, okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, when Oasis came out in the 90s and stuff like that, I was listening to, like, you know, like, Sick of It All and, you know what I mean, and, like, Biohazard and, you know, and a lot of hip-hop. And, you know, so it just wasn't really on my radar as much.
Yeah.
So I just kind of, like, wrote it off as, like...
Yeah. I almost wore my Noel Gallagher tour shirt for you tonight, but I swapped at the last minute for the Lana Del Rey.
Yeah, I actually noticed the Lana Del Rey shirt. But, yeah, I enjoy you on a lot of levels, but your musical taste, not just in Oasis, but just in general, is cool. So
I grew up in one of the greatest eras of and I had older brothers and sisters. So like the stuff like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the War, all that stuff got handed down to me.
Sure.
But then I grew up in a small town. And, like, we didn't have shit, so I would read Rolling Stone magazine front to back.
Mm-hmm.
Every 2 weeks, I would just read it. And whatever Anthony DeCurtis said to listen to, I listened to. You know, whatever Rob Sheffield said to listen to, I listened to. And I just absorbed it all, you know?
Yeah, it's great, because, like, there's a part of me that wants to want younger kids to understand the struggle of, like... Like, you know, I mean, we'd have to go to, like, I lived in a rural town, and we would have to, I'm originally from the East Coast, but we were living in rural Colorado, and, like, we would have to, like, drive down to the city, and I would go buy, like a copy of Maximum Rock and Roll, the punk rock scene, when I was, like, in the fifth and sixth grade, and, like, and I would read it cover to cover, and, you know what I mean, and, like, there's a part of me that's like, well, if I struggled, you have to struggle, but it's actually, like, really great now that kids can just, like, find 500 bands that like that are great, and like I always say, like if I had a Comic-Con, because I always read comic books too, that's another thing I enjoy, you know, so I always read comic books and listen to like punk music, and like if I just had access to that and like could go hang out at a Comic-Con or something like that with other people who like the same shit that I did, I probably would have stayed out of a lot of trouble, you know what I mean?
Right.
because I would have had like this avenues of like success, you know what I mean? Like, oh look, here's people that I like that are doing the same things that I like, and like, you know what I mean, as opposed to like I'm just gonna kick it by myself and you know what I mean. So
what, one of the things I'd feel sorry for like the younger kids is like I tell them like, man, I can remember what it was like waiting for the second Oasis album to come out, or waiting for the third Oasis album to come out. I remember waiting for, dude, here's a great story. We saw Public Enemy like in 1992, Apocalypse 91, mm-hmm. Enemy Strikes Black tour, and there was a band opening up for them that we had never heard of, and that band was called Rage Against the Machine.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing them and blowing our minds and them saying to the crowd, our record will be out in a couple of months, like just waiting for that record to come out and like watching what happened after that record came out. Like, and or like I try to tell people like what it was like the first time we heard All Eyes on Me all the way through. Mm-hmm. Like I feel so lucky that we got to experience that new and not by just doing a search for Tupac and like this is what comes up. Like,
sure.
This is what you're getting fed, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always going to be, like the purity of that is undeniable. You know what I mean? Like, I saw the tour before I saw Public Enemy with Anthrax.
I was going to say Anthrax, and yeah. Primus. I remember that tour.
And they had opening up for them Young Black Teenagers.
YBT. Tap the bottle and twist the cap. those guys, right?
Yep, exactly. And they were white kids. And calling themselves Young Black Teenagers, which they're actually in the Pajama Jammy Jam house party movie as well. But they, which is, and I would be interested to see how they feel about that these days. But I had seen that on that trip. And Rage Against the Machine is interesting because Zach was in a band called Inside Out before that. And
yes.
We were all a huge Inside Out fan, me and all the hardcore kids, and then we had gone and seen Rage Against the Machine on their first thing at a sports bar in Denver, and and they were great, and Zach was always cool, he was always a really cool guy. Inside Out's last 7-inch was going to be called Rage Against the Machine, which was a funny little note,
really.
Yep. But they never released it. Uh-huh. So that was going to be the name of it. It was Rage Against the Machine. And I give them all the credit in the world for, I mean, people can say what they want, for some reason they get picked on a lot for making money or whatever, but I'd rather see them make it than just about anybody. So
they were a great band, but also I kind of when the whole and this is a whole other controversy thing, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing, when Rage got nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I was like, you know what, they were a great band, but they literally made the same album 3 times in a row. Mm-hmm. they never did a ballad. They never did, Guns N' Roses, got crazy and was, just doing all this crazy stuff. But Rage Against the Machine never really fucked with the formula. So, I mean, they're a great band, but, are they Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Nah, I don't think so. Yeah. I think there's other bands more deserving.
I think the seminal nature of what they did kind of makes them maybe more than the music, their place in the...
Okay. But I think if we're going to say that, then Cypress Hill should be... in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I would love Cypress
Hill. I would love to see Cypress Hill in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I would love to see, you know what I mean? I still listen. I mean, I think Muggs should in the Rock, because he's still putting out great shit. I mean,
he defined 91 to 94.
He could be sitting around. DJ Muggs could be, shout out to DJ Muggs if you're listening, but he could be sitting around. Just collecting royalty checks off of House of Pain's Jump Around, and freaking Insane in the Membrane. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. he did the music on both those records, and those things already made him a millionaire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, but he put out great stuff. He's got a great song called Assassination Day that he did with MF Doom. Rest in peace, MF Doom. Big Doom fan. It's some of the heaviest producing out there. It is heavy. You know,
and
what
it
I mean?
Was definitely a sound. It was this dark industrial. It was this. It was so LA.
Yeah, exactly.
It was so DTLA. It was so downtown LA, and it was just oh man, it was so good.
Yeah.
That first the first Cypress Hills is great, but I think the production, the first one is great because it's raw and it's gritty and it's very autobiographical, but the production in the second and third Cypress Hills records is just so dark and gloomy. Yeah, and just
it's so good. I mean, and also you pick it up on that same vibe, although it's oddly more party gloom, I would call it, on which one did Muggs do? Did he do Death Certificate for Ice Cube?
On Predator.
It's Predator. He produced Predator. That's right. And that record's totally a Muggs record, but it's still got that Cube sort of darkness to it. You know what I mean? Because especially those first Cube records were really dark. But, he's a different story now. But,
Yeah. Man, we could talk about music. I want to get to what made you grab a microphone, jump on stage, and start telling jokes. Because you didn't do it till, how old were you when you started?
Fuck, man, I don't even know. 40,
41, 42. Yeah. So our stories are very similar to Dean Del Rey's stories of that he didn't start till he was 44-ish, I think.
So I always wanted to do stand up.
Yeah.
Like my whole life, I wanted to do stand up. I've always been a fan of stand up. I've always kind of written stand up bits. I always wrote little satire for years. I wrote what I called the Funyun, which I would just write like fake onion articles. You know what I mean? Like, uh-huh. And just because I just enjoyed that sort of thing. And I always wanted to do stand up. I had a book when I was a kid about doing it. And I just like one of those plans, but like, you know, not to get too serious, but my life was a struggle for a lot of years, and I just never was able to do it. You know what I mean? So once I kind of felt like my kids were in a good place with their age and things like that, and that it was maybe important to show them about me chasing a few dreams. Like
yeah.
I decided that was good. You know, my kids were a little older. They didn't need me around as much. You know what I mean? Not that they didn't need me or anything, or like I've abandoned them for stand up.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
But I also, you know, like to do stand up, you know what I mean? And I wanted to try it. I worked with I was very fortunate. I was friends with Johnny Taylor and Keith Lowell Jensen on through social media. I worked with a great Portland comic named Dylan Jenkins and Adam Posse, who are amazing Portland comedians and great dudes, and still to this day great friends of mine. And I asked them a lot about it, and Dylan said I should try it and kind of like walk me through it. And so I just ended up coming out and doing it. So
wow. Do you remember where the first time you got up at? Was it an open mic?
An open mic. It was the Funhouse open mic, and it's now gone. But it was a casualty of the pandemic. But I, we got up there, and I probably went up like Dylan got me on. He walked me up there, and I did good enough. You know what I mean? I still actually use some of the jokes that I told. Like not, I mean chunks of the jokes. I mean it's very different versions now. But like you know what I mean? But like there's still like some of the jokes I came out with were from that first set. So, and I did good enough. You know, and so and I was like got the bug in me, and then.
Yeah, how infectious was that first laugh? I always joke that it's like the first line of coke.
It really is. It's like it is. You know, like I've always said, like cocaine is so fucking good. People ask me like, who have never done cocaine? It's so fucking good that people right now will like spin the chamber on the gun every single time that with the fentanyl and all that right. shit. You know what I mean? Like everybody's like, ah, fuck it, it's worth it to try it. You know what I mean? Like, but. Like comedy's the same way. Like you can see why it. Like you know, Johnny Taylor has a joke where he talks about you know she's gonna leave you.
She's gonna leave you.
And it's like and it's true. And it continues. You know, like it's going to take your like. You could do comedy every night of the week, and still not feel like you're doing enough. You know yeah. what I mean? Like it is like. Like I you know, I'm not happy with months that I don't have any less. I have less than like 8 bookings, and I need to make, you know what I mean? Like all of this stuff, like I need to make sure that I'm like constantly doing it, mixing the writing projects and then the podcast. And it's like, you know, you stay fucking really busy with it, but like, I don't think I could not do it. You know what I mean? I just don't know how you stop doing
this. Yeah. Either. I don't see how I could live a life where I'm not somehow getting up on stage. Like it's just, I fucking love it so much.
And the people who've quit, I'm always the question I always want to ask them. It's like, you know, do what you got to do for yourself, please. But I always want to. Do you quit writing jokes too, or do you just like write jokes and just?
No, like, now they just like they do corny dad jokes.
Or right,
like,
right.
Yeah, their wife is tired of them being funny. Like you know,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know? I mean, that's just kind of like where it's at. It's like, I just don't think I could quit writing jokes. You know what I mean? Like I don't know. Like I like writing jokes. You know, yeah. And I like trying out jokes, and I like when jokes are very good for me. You know what I mean? And I like when jokes are successful, and I like working on them. And I don't know. It's
you said something a few minutes ago that I think is really important. I kind of want to touch on it because I want to ask if you saw it. You said that you thought it was important for your children to see you chasing a dream.
Mm-hmm.
How did that revelation come about? Or did you see your parents chasing a dream, or did you see other folks' parents chasing? Like how? That's such, man, that's heavy stuff, dude.
Well, I mean,
it's like a Springsteen song.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, which is a big compliment to me, but because I'm a big Bruce fan. But Bruce, man, like, you go see him live, and he'll still play Glory Days like it's the first time he's ever written.
Yeah.
He's got to fucking hate that song, man. Like, sidebar for a second about Bruce. Like, that's what makes him, to me, like, a legend. Like, you go see him live, A, he'll play for 3 hours. I mean, you're talking about a dude in his, like, 70s at this point. You know what I mean? And, like, he'll come out and, like, play 3 hours. They got no opener. They warm up their own crowd. He comes out and plays everything you want to hear from all of them, from Nebraska, from Ghost of Tom Joe, you know, everything you wanted, all the cool songs, all the popular songs. He, like, plays all the shit. And, like, he'll finish on Glory Days, and you'll be like... Like, as somebody who's been in bands, like, you hate the songs by the time you get to the stage with them. You've already broken them apart. You've already said, okay, this part isn't working. How about if we do this? I mean, it doesn't even look like art to you by the time you get to the stage. It looks like a collection of a fucking Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah,
like,
it's a collection of mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, okay, this is good. And you kind of feel like, but he'll come out and play that shit, like, and I actually take a lot of that sort of stuff into my stand-up, because it's like, oh, like, even if I've told a joke a million times, go out there with that fresh energy. You know what I mean? And that's just like, and that's what makes it entertaining. But I don't know. I don't want to have my kids see me just fucking sit around on the couch and rot. You know what I mean? I want my dad, my parents are, you know, like there's stuff with us and everything like that. But ultimately, like, my dad always, like, went and rode a bicycle 100 miles, and, you know, he's a working man. I grew up in a very working class poor family. He's a carpenter, and he always worked, and he always did stuff, and he always really wanted us to, like, live a life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's nothing the matter with, like, but, like, staying home and, like, doing, as long as you're happy and you're doing things. There's been great times in my life where I've done a whole fucking shitload of nothing, and it was good for me mentally and things like that. But ultimately, I want my kids to, like, be like, oh, even dad at 42 years old, who's spent the last 10 years, like, just focused on our shit and got sober and, like, kind of cleaned up. But, like, life doesn't end, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can go do comedy. Like, sure. Like, would it be great if I started comedy when I was 18 and could be, like, cruising my way through to move to Hollywood or fucking New York and do all this shit? Like, yeah, that would be amazing. But, like, the reality is I got the time I got, and I want my kids to be, like, you know, my kids are older now, and my 18-year-old non-binary kid, Zelda, their friend got a fake ID to come see me do comedy.
That's sick.
Yeah, and you know what I mean? Reads my Hard Times articles and loves it and stuff like that. And it's a moment of pride for both of them. My daughter is in a band, and I really like to think that it's like a part of it's like just like, hey, you know what? Like, you're going to go, like, you know, my daughter was a sponsored skater when she was like 7, you know what I mean? And shit, and I just always wanted, like, we do things like,
yeah.
Go out and work at stuff, because, like, otherwise you're just going to go to work and you're going to die, and that's going to fucking suck.
Well, you know what? To stay to finish this part of the conversation on a Springsteen note, mm-hmm. My first 18 months of comedy where I was just fucking eating dicks at open mics, and it just fucking sucked, and it was just horrible. The Springsteen song that, like, got me through that was Racing in the Streets.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great
because the two characters of that song, right? The wife gives up on her dreams, but the guy chases us, and the whole, like, I remember I would come home from work, change, and go to an open mic, and that's what kept me going. So the whole, some guys come home from work and wash up and go racing in the streets.
Yep.
I fucking love that song. Yeah. And that got me through those first 18 months when I was driving to an open mic, and I'm like, why am I fucking going? Because, you know, there's open mics where you sign up and you don't even go up,
yeah.
You know? Or, mm-hmm. like, you sign up and they're like, sorry, we're only going to give you 3 minutes, you know? But it was like, I'm chasing that dream, man.
Yeah, you just got to, you chase that laugh. And it's like, I don't know, like, you know, and I'll go back to what I said at the beginning, man. Like, you got to love the process and fucking comedy. Like, everybody who's sitting, like, some people, yeah, they kind of came in and they had an easy go to begin with. But a lot of us didn't, you know, and a lot of us, like, would like showed up and all the comics knew each other and we all sat in the corner and we went up there and we didn't know what the fuck we were doing and we said stupid jokes that took way too long and had too many words and all that, you know. And it's like the people who are still here, still doing it, who have gotten great at it, are the people who, and you sound like such a fucking boomer when you say this shit, but have just decided that that's not, that wasn't going to be the thing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to get beat by a couple bad rooms, a couple shitty open mics. No, I mean, like, look at all of us now. You know what I mean? Like we're fucking, we're doing shows at the Punchline. We're doing all these things. And all we had to do was just eat some dicks for fucking.
Tonight's show was fucking great.
Yeah, it was fucking great.
It was so much fun.
Everybody had a fucking great time. Everybody had great sets. It was like, you know, it's just like one of those nights that you just like, you drive the fuck away from the place and you're like, this is the whole reason I did all this. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
As I was walking out of the Callback Bar, an older lady walked by me, smiled, and said, "I loved your stories." And I was just like, done, checked. Done. Let me get home. Yeah, you know?
I'll take that over. I won't take that over anything, but I will take that as a very real, like this is the shit. This is what we're here for. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
And what the fuck else would I be doing tonight?
A podcast.
Well, no, but like, yeah, if I wasn't doing any of this, though, I'd be like sitting in my house, like probably looking at my phone. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, wishing I was doing something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and so I'd rather do this any night of the week. Yeah,
and so like, if I die on the way home tonight, I will at least know that I'm gonna blame my friend Kyle Adams. It's gonna be his fault, and because he's sitting right here.
Yeah,
but I'll know that, like, you know. I fucking gave it my go, you know what I mean? Like, I tried to do something with this, and you know,
that's awesome. Let's turn the corner. Let's wrap this up with my favorite segment, five easy questions. Let's see if I can remember five of them. I always struggle remembering them.
All right, let's do it.
All right, here we go. Question number one: who or what inspires you?
I would say, I don't know, like, I have a natural drive to do things, and so that's, like, a kind of inspiration in it, and, you know, I would say that, like, I'm inspired by being a dad and wanting to be that, and then also, like, you know, I'll say it, like, I'm inspired by, you know, my dad and what he does, and, you know, and the work he's done, and, you know, the times we haven't seen eye to eye and everything like that, he has laid it out, you know what I mean? And he still tries to, you know, he's getting up there in age, but he still does the work that he does, and he rides his bike, and he does all those things, and it's like, yeah, just stay active, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so awesome.
Yep, and that's it. And also, I don't know, like, I just don't want to be bored. You know?
Yeah.
So that's the inspiration in that, if that makes sense.
Question number two, what are you currently binging? It doesn't have to be a TV series. It could just be anything. Like, it could be like a certain artist, a certain podcast. What are you like, just, what have you discovered recently and you just can't get enough of it?
There's a few things. I just watched I've been watching the latest season of True Detective.
Oh, yeah.
And I had only watched the first season, which I loved, and then the second season wasn't good, so I quit watching it.
Okay,
but I went and watched the third season completely while I'm waiting for the seasons, for the new episodes to come out, and the third season was unfucking believable. I really, really...
Vince Vaughn?
No, that's second season.
That's the second season. That's okay.
Second season. And I went back and finished second season, and it's not great, but it does get better, and it's and ultimately it's not that bad. So I've been really enjoying that. I deep dive a lot of different, you know, musics and music genres, and I'm still really, you know, really heavy fucking with, like, and I have forever, but, like, right now I'm in a deep, like, 68, 69 reggae. Just, like, a lot of rock steady stuff, the early skinhead reggae stuff.
Yeah, I love the rock steady stuff. Yep. I was trying to explain the rock steady to my roommate the other night. Awesome. What are you afraid of? Number three, what are you afraid of?
Mice, rats in general, rodents kind of in general, they shock me. Something deeper than that. I don't know. I don't like letting people down that are counting on me.
Okay.
That bums me the fuck out. So I like to show up and be the person, you know what I mean? Like that, you know, so.
Okay. You're on death row. This is question number four. You're on death row. What is your request for a last meal?
Well, I am, the thing that we didn't talk about is I'm actually a really big food guy, and I've worked in the food industry as well my whole life. And, if you look at me, you can tell that I am an enjoyer of the food thing. So it can go a couple different ways. I'm kind of a blue collar person. So I could say a Steak'em sandwich. If anybody's familiar with Steak'em, the frozen beef sheets, it's steak.
Joey Diaz talked about Steak'ems a lot on his podcast. Yeah,
that makes sense. Cause he's an East Coast guy. It's a big East Coast thing, but Steak'ems are steak and tasty, you know what I mean, like steak delicious. They're delicious, and every sheet of them, they're 100% beef. They have no other ingredient, but I think it's like beef sawdust. I'm not really sure, but anyways, but it is absolutely delicious. So I could probably go a Steak'em sandwich, but ultimately maybe like some eggplant parmesan, or that's a real comfort dish for me. I like Indian food. I like Korean food. I like Vietnamese food. So maybe like a.
Do you like spice?
Spicy? I love spicy, but yeah. I can also eat not spicy stuff. You know what I mean? Like I can enjoy it. Like yeah, I eat a lot of spicy food. I love. And ultimately, I went on a work trip to the banana farms in southern Mexico, and there was a woman who made food for us the whole time we were there at the place we were staying. I'd probably have her come up and make it for me. I'm just
nice.
Like, I don't give a fuck what it is, like just anything she made, just some slow cooked like Mexican meat food and things like that. Like, they don't fuck around in there.
I get it. And question number five: what's next? What's your next big endeavor? What's next? A book?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to get. I got a horror story, horror novella that I'm working on. I got a comedy, like a novelty joke book that it's not jokes, but they're like, it's a funny book that I'm working on. And I think the big thing for me now is like maybe taking, you know, like trying to get my podcast to the next level, get it to where it's, you know what I mean. Like we're already on the thing, and I want to get it to like a level where it's. You know, like, I mean, it would be great if it was more of a part-time job financially and that right. sort of thing. You know what I mean? We have great content, and at some point you sort of get terminal velocity on that sort of thing, and it really becomes about, like, the algorithms and the SEOs and the getting it into people's, you know what I mean, into people's situations. So that's just getting it to people's ears, you know what right. I mean? Like, I'm happy with the product. I mean, we will never quit working on the product and getting it better, but we also, like, you know what I mean? Now it's really just about, like getting it in the lexicon so everybody
yeah gets it, so I get it. Ryan, did we talk about everything you wanted to talk about? Did we leave any stones unturned? Because we're gonna wrap it up. We're gonna call it a night here very soon.
Did we talk about Oasis?
We can revisit.
Are you a Noel or Liam guy?
Oh, the talent. I'm a Noel. I'm a Noel, but I would have done a lot of coke with Liam. Well, you could do coke with Noel too, but yeah. I'm a Noel guy.
I think that I started as a Noel guy, but I just think I'm a Liam guy. Like, he's just like, you know, they're cats and dogs, you know, and hence them not getting along. But I think that ultimately, like, man, Liam's funny, and I think Liam's got a really good heart.
Do you think we'll see a reunion? I think we will.
Unfortunately, it'll probably be someplace that I won't be able to go see it. But they'll play like Glastonbury or yeah. I mean, or they'll go play what's the deal here in California?
Coachella?
Yeah, Coachella. Some uh-huh. bullshit like that. You know what I mean? Like they'll do something like that.
Did you see them?
I never saw them.
I saw them twice. Once Corner Shop opened and once Travis opened.
Wow.
Yeah, saw them. Twice. A friend of mine saw them open for U2 at the Oakland wow. Arena, and I thought, I'm kind of jealous of that.
That's quite a show.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous of that night, because there must have been some boozing backstage.
Yeah, that was in the Yeah. Anyways. So that's what I want to talk about.
Ryan, thank you for stopping by, man. I know it's been a crazy day, and you had a great set tonight. And I look forward to. I want to come up to Portland and do some shows. I would love to.
There's shows to be done.
All right. I'll be in touch.
All right, man.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, man.
Bye.